I was going to entitle this lesson something, I perhaps would call it, "What You Give Is What You Get to Keep." We get lots of things in life, but have you noticed that you don't keep them? Have you noticed how that so many things have a tendency to slip through your hands? You get it, but you can't keep it. It's not yours. You only get to keep what you can give. Or as our friend Verl Minto says, you keep the carbon copy. John Greenleaf Whittier wrote, "Immortal love, forever full, forever flowing free, forever shared, forever whole, a never ebbing sea." Forever shared. This universe, this loving universe, this exquisitely responsive universe is always sharing itself with us, all of itself. It holds nothing back, and it requires that we be like unto it because we've been created of it. We are of its essence, its substance. And what it does, we must also do, and consequently, we cannot hold anything back. You can only keep what you give. Security has never, ever been achieved in the acquisition of persons or things, but only in the sharing. Frank Laubach wrote, "These rivers of living water carry everything with them," and he's not talking now about the water that is of the earth, this water, this substance that we drink, this element. He's talking about these streams of spiritual energy, of universal power and love. They sweep away obstructions. They break dams. They keep on rising to cover and to heal and bless the world. If a man can be wide open so that he himself no longer blocks God, then all the power and love of God's infinite heart can flow through and out in every direction. It is not until we become a channel for this living water, its essence, its power, its creations, its forms, flowing into us, yes, but through us. It is the flowing through that changes our destiny and gives us the security that we seek. And never can we hold it or cling to it, because if we do, we block God. But ultimately, these dams must break, because we are to become channels. And in that channeling of these universal energies, we find our strength, our peace, our destiny, and our security. I have looked in many sources of information about goal setting and achieving, and nowhere have I found information about this principle that we're speaking of tonight. At first glance, you might equate it with last week's lesson, in which we talked about going into action. Remember, we were talking about the necessity to begin to move. Even if you're on the right track, you'll be run over if you just sit there. And so many of you this week have come to me with exciting results of the activities that you started in your life since the class last week. You went into action, and already the results are coming in. Things are happening in your life, and you know what they are, and you know what caused them, because you began to do the things that should be done by you to make your personal demonstration. Do you believe that goal setting and achieving is a real possibility for you? Do you? Are you still excited about what can happen? Let me tell you about an exciting telephone call that I received 1 hour and 30 minutes ago exactly from Los Angeles, from Hollywood. One of my mastermind partners, you will one day see his name in lights. He was here during the Christmas holidays. Our last candle lighting service, not the one just passed, but the one before that, he was the handsome young trumpeter who played there. You know Todd. Most of you know Todd. Just last fall, as the result of new goals that he had set for himself in his life, he took himself to California. He did not leave his mastermind group. We have met with him regularly. Almost every Monday he calls us during the meeting, and we always are working with him. Recently I did a seminar in Las Vegas on the mastermind principle, and Todd flew over from Los Angeles. He just signed a contract today with a major motion picture company. He will be cast as a co-star with Susanna York and Elliot Gould. How do you like that? Isn't that exciting? And as we were talking tonight, he said, every inch of this came from practicing these principles, Jack. Without them, this could not have happened. And he said, yesterday when I was talking with Susanna York and the casting agent, and he said, you can imagine that I was elated. And he said, the casting agent asked me how I felt, and he said, grateful, excited and grateful. He said, I know where this is coming from. It works. Every time that Todd and I have ever left each other, when we've been standing physically close, one of us would say, we're going all the way together. All the way. You and I are going all the way together too. Because your dreams are your dreams, and your dreams are just as valid, just as real, just as capable of fulfillment and of expression as any other person that you've ever met. But I want to tell you something about Todd. He is a dreamer who goes into action in a way that I have rarely seen. That young man gets with it. And you just heard the first report of the practicing of spiritual principles in his life. A mountaineer came to town and saw a box of tangerines for the first time, and he knew that it wasn't an orange and it sure didn't look like a lemon. And the grocer kidded him for a little while, and then he said, try one. And the hillbilly said, no, I reckon not. He said, I've got so many tastes already that I can't satisfy, that I ain't aiming to take on any new ones. So many people feel that they have tastes that they can't satisfy because they are not satisfied. Their lives are not fulfilled. And the only reason that they have not satisfied their tastes, their desires, their hopes and their dreams is that they either don't believe that they can, or knowing that they can, they have not formed a plan. They have not established worthwhile, meaningful goals. And they have not moved forward to taste life in a new way. Not long ago, we were having dinner at a seafood restaurant, and I thought, the first guy that ever ate a raw oyster was really bold. He was either very hungry or very bold. He really had an imagination. And now look, go to a seafood house and watch what happens. You must be very bold to taste of these new things in life. Do you not think that Todd was bold when he began to believe that he could step forward, could move forward successfully into an industry that has broken the heart of so many young men and women who have tried? Ah, but he had a master plan, and he had a power, a super intelligence working with him to do the things for him that he could not do for himself, and he knew it. And everything that we have been practicing in this series of lessons, Todd has been practicing in his life. And these ideas work, and he said, this could simply not be happening to me without these principles and this power and those of you who are working with me. Joe Girard, the world's greatest automobile salesman, has given up selling automobiles and has become an author. Some of you know Joe. As a matter of fact, he has been here at another time. This week he was a guest on the Good Morning Detroit television show discussing his new book, How to Sell Anything to Anybody. For those of you on tape, I just held the book up. That was what that little rustle was. Now, Joe was a failure by his own admission until the age of 35, and then he discovered a success system, and in just 15 years has made a phenomenal demonstration with his life. And on the program, he was talking with the host who was asking Joe about his success. And Joe said, you must have a mission in life. Now, mission was the word he used, but he obviously was looking for a better word. You know, at times when you want to express yourself and you can't quite find the word that will do it. And the host said, well, Joe, you made lots of money selling cars. Wasn't that your mission? And Joe said, yes, I made 10 times more money selling automobiles than I'm now making writing these books. But I must teach and help people to experience what I have experienced. I must share what I have found. And when someone comes up to me and says that their life has been made richer because of something they learned from me, that makes my life richer. It's more rewarding than money. I have enough money now to get by, but I don't have enough of these other things to satisfy my life. You've got to have a mission. The person who told me about seeing Joe on television is here tonight, and it's interesting that a day or two before she saw Joe on television, she had seen his new book on a book rack in a drugstore. And she said, oh, no, not another self-help book. But she happened to open it up. You know how we sometimes take a free peek before we put the book back? And what she saw when she opened it was a statement to the effect that, yes, you've got to have goals in life, but you've got to have goals for today. You've got to have a plan of action for each day. It's not enough to have goals just for your life. You've got to bring that down into a plan of action. Remember last week we were talking about into action now, into action in this time compartment that you call today with your life. Now, the interesting thing was that this was exactly what she needed to hear or to read, because she couldn't get that statement out of her mind. So she came up with a game plan or an outline for the next day, and it turned into one of the most exciting and successful days that she has ever had. Now, she's not a salesman, but she is a professional person, and so she decided to buy the book, and this is the book that she bought. And then she saw Joe on television. Is it a coincidence that these things begin to work? Is it? You and I must have goals, because your mind is a goal-seeking mechanism. You've got to have goals for your whole life, and you've got to have a plan of action for today. You can't have a worthwhile plan for today unless you have a mission, unless you have a larger overview, but then that mission must become more than just the fulfilling of your own goal. The word mission has among its definitions this, a self-imposed duty. And it comes from the Latin meaning to let go or to send. A self-imposed duty. Remember in wartime how we send some of our flyers out on a mission? They perform their mission and then they return. I have a self-imposed duty, and I will share it with you if you will not tell anybody about it, because I don't want people who don't understand to know about it. My self-imposed duty is to go out into each day to do the very best I possibly can to make this a better world in which to live. Now, do you think that it's presumptuous of me to have that kind of a mission? I don't think so, because there was a time in my life when, without thinking, without a plan, I went out in the world to take as much out of it as I could possibly get for myself. I was interested in myself, and maybe a little bit in yourself if there was ever anything left over, but there never was anything left over, so that left you out, didn't it? So now my mission must become the opposite of what my mission formerly was. And I know some of you understand what I'm saying because I can tell by the smile on your face. Mission comes from the Latin meaning to let go. It means to send. And so I have to let go and send myself out into this life to have a new experience. But more than that, to cause other people to have a better experience to the best of my ability at the time to do so. It matters less and less about me. And I am more and more concerned about you. Concerned does not mean worried. I know something about you. You're going to make it. You may struggle a bit. You may go kicking and squealing to your ultimate destiny, but you will make it. Life is rigged, and it's going to take you there whether you like it or not. You're going to get there. So I'm not going to worry. I have dried all of my tears except of happiness. I will never suffer for you again as long as I live, and I promise you that. You cannot call me on the telephone and get me to worry about you or to be afraid or to feel sorry for you. Ever. Ever. If we're going to succeed in life, and I'm sure that that is our primary goal, we're going to have to become responsible, not only for our success, but responsible, meaning answerable for our own behavior, able to be trusted or depended upon, reliable, and responsible to each other. Your destiny is important to me. The quality of your life is important to me. So I know how Joe Girard felt when he was looking for a better word than mission to describe the desire that arises in the heart of each of us in time, the desire to share with others what we have found ourselves. It's in you, this desire, this mission. You may not be so bold as to stand up in front of all these people and admit it like I do, but it's in you. So I am admitting it for you. I will tell you something else about yourself. I'm going to lay a word on you that I'll bet you never have thought of about yourself. I'm going to label you. You are a philanthropist, a lover of people. A philanthropist is one who makes the effort to increase the well-being of mankind. Who makes the effort, who does the things necessary, who gives of his or her substance. You see, to love people is not philanthropy itself. Philanthropy is that love going into action. Suppose that Jesus Christ had come to the earth to have his experience, to report to us that God is love and that God loves you. And that's all that you ever got, was just the idea that God loved you. But that love was not responsible to you or for you, and you could never connect with it. It was not going to dry your tears and lift you up and direct you and guide you and put your feet upon the path and guide you along the way. It was just a love that loved you from a distance and kind of waved its hand and said, cheerio. What kind of love would that be? No. Love is the love that a mother has that goes into the room in the middle of the night and changes the diaper, that does for that helpless little child that which cannot be done. That is the least activity of love, and sometimes we think it is the highest. Oh, the universe loves you, but it responds to you. It cares for you. It is a lover of people. Did you know that God is a philanthropist? A lover of people. Why not? God created people to love and has given them everything that they can ever possibly desire or experience. But the person must appropriate that experience. And you see, we have mistakenly believed that to appropriate means to receive. Now admit it. I will appropriate. I will grab a bunch. And after I get my hands on it, I will keep it. I will hide it behind me. I will put it in the bank. I will possess it. You cannot have that which is mine. Well, the universe has given all that it has to each of us, and it requires that we be like it is. So, you can only keep what you give away. You cannot be a qualified receiver unless and until you become a qualified giver. The first step in learning to give is to forgive. Now, it's very important that you and I learn to be givers. It's very important if you wish to make your demonstration, if you wish to achieve your goals. And most goal-setting philosophies do not understand this. Forgive comes from a root word meaning to give or receive. And it's very important that we see that. It's from an ancient word that means to give or receive. And in our modern language and psychology, we have separated giving and receiving. We have seen them as two different words, two different acts, two really unconnected things. That receiving is receiving. It is something unto itself. And giving is something unto itself. And it is not so. These two things are a polarity, meaning they complement each other, and neither is real unless the other exists simultaneously with it. And so, therefore, if you would draw upon your bank, your universal bank account, if you would draw into yourself the substance, the energy, the love, the wisdom, the power that you need to make your demonstration, you can only do so if at the same time you create a flow away from you. As a matter of fact, you cannot create it to you unless you cause it to go away from you, unless you cause a draft. It must flow. And in order to do this, one must give up. Another meaning of the root word is to leave off anger or blame, to forgive, to give in advance. To give before you receive is to forgive. Now, who ever heard of giving before they received anything? It's not normal. It's not natural. It's not human, is it? That's exactly right. It's not. And that's why we have to learn to do it. Jesus told a remarkable story that had a penetrating message that our minds do not want us to hear. It's in the lesson following the withering of the fig tree when he was showing us how our minds can curse or bless. And he said, if you only have faith in God, this is the absolute truth. You can say to this Mount of Olives, rise up and fall into the Mediterranean, and your command will be obeyed. You can say to any mountainous problem, rise up and fall away, and your command will be obeyed. But one must have more faith in God than they do in the problem. All that is required is that you really believe and have no doubt. Exclamation point. Listen to me. Exclamation point. You can pray for anything, italic. For emphasis. And if you believe you have it, it's yours. Italics, exclamation point. But when you're praying, now hear this. First, forgive anyone you're holding a grudge against. Or, if you have anything against anyone, forgive them. So that your Father in heaven will forgive you your sin. This is the primary requisite of prayer. That once you start believing, and that's essential, really believing, believing with all your heart, there is another law that is polar to it, like unto it, that must be honored and obeyed, and that is to forgive. And the reason that I mention this to you is that we have now come into that phase of our goal achieving demonstration, that some of us are not making our demonstrations. You're quite successful in some areas, but some things simply have not worked at all. You just have no movement in your demonstration. No, it's just not happening to you. And I want to tell you why. If you have aught against any person or any group of people, any race of people, any class of people, anyone who died years ago, then you can't make your demonstration. Let me prove to you that there really is only one mind. This morning when I was making this note at this particular point, my telephone rang again, and it was a long-distance call, and it was 5:45 in the morning. I know that you think I get a lot of long-distance telephone calls, and I do. And here again was this voice, another voice that was surprised when I answered. She said, "I've been listening to your prosperity lessons on tape, and I can't sleep." And I said, "I hope they didn't keep you awake." And she said, "Well, it wasn't the cassettes. It was some ideas that were there." She said, "I'm into this need and this activity of making my demonstration. I'm doing something about my life. I'm calm. I'm calmer than I've ever been in my life. All is well. I'm not depressed. I'm not depressed, Jack. I'm not depressed." "Now, I believe everything you say, but I can't get the feeling for it. How do I create the enthusiasm that's going to create my demonstration for me? How do I get it started?" And I said, "Well, have you forgiven everybody?" And there was a pause, and she said, "Everybody?" "Everybody." And I suggested that we forgive them all right now, right then. And so we went through the process. And then I asked her to think about the great good that she would like to have in her life, to get a clear picture of all of the exciting things that she was working with, that she wished to have happen, that she knew about and had clarified in her own mind. I said, "Get a picture of it." I said, "Now tell me when the picture is clear." And in a few moments she said, "It's clear." I said, "Okay, now give all that you have for yourself to each of those people, especially the one who has offended you in the worst way." And I could hear her suck her breath in. "To him? Especially to him. To give my good to that person? It is not your good until you give it to that person. Until you give it to the least of these, it is not yours. It is not yours. You cannot get it to keep. Even if you should get it, you can't keep it. You can only keep what you give away." In a little while, she said, "Oh, wait a minute. Now I see it. Forgiveness is the joy of having me prosper without any resistance to any other person prospering. Oh, in fact," she said, "to forgive is to give to the other person in advance what you formerly wished for yourself alone. It never occurred to me that what I was desiring and dreaming and planning and hoping and picturing and setting as a goal for myself, that I had to also become willing and actually release into the lives of other people. Boy," she said, "does that ever feel good to my heart. Now I can feel the enthusiasm that I was missing." At that moment, my eye fell to an open Bible that was on my desk and listened to what I read to her. One of the teachers of religion who was standing there listening to the discussion realized that Jesus had answered well, and so he asked, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" And Jesus replied, "The one that says, 'Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. and you must love him with all your heart and soul and mind and strength. The second is like unto it, meaning equal to it. You must love others as much as you love yourself. You must love others. You see, all the world loves a lover, but the universe gives to a giver. And so I said to her, in order to succeed, according to the universal law that can't be broken, you must become a philanthropist, a lover of people. And she said, I love people. And I said, now you're going to have a chance to prove it, because as your demonstration is made, as these things come into your life, you're going to be able to share them with all of the people around you. You're going to be able to take a part of everything you get and give it. No longer can your good be for you and for you alone. Your life must become a mission of sharing and of making the lives of other people a joyous and happy and prospering experience. That which you would desire for yourself, that which you went into action for last week for yourself, now your action, now your activity is to begin to expand your mind and to develop that spiritual maturity that causes you to be one who gives. I've been asked, is it right to pray for things? Just last week, someone who was attending this very class on the science of goal achieving asked me, is it really right for us to set goals for material things and then try to have God give them to us? And I said, try. If we do it right, you don't try, meaning making a feeble or futile attempt. You do it. It happens. It's the law. If someone says to you, I will try to meet you tomorrow evening, you know they're not going to make it. You don't even look out the window, do you? I will try. I will make a feeble, futile attempt. Sometimes we kid someone and we say, I'm doing the very best I possibly can. Don't you know how hard I'm trying? Meaning I'm not really doing it at all. Now, we live in a universe of law that you either do it or you don't do it. Trying doesn't count in this universe, I can tell you that. It simply doesn't count. You do it or you don't do it. Once when Jesus had been out praying, and at that point his disciples said, gee, that's wonderful, Jesus. Show us how to do it. And so he taught them the Lord's Prayer. And then he continued to teach them other spiritual laws of prayer. And he used this illustration. And it's the story of tenacity or persistence. Remember the story that he said, suppose you went to a friend's house at midnight and you told your friend that you wanted to borrow 3 loaves of bread because you had company that came. And your friend shouts down at you and says, the door is locked. And besides, why didn't you go to the grocery store? I had to go to the grocery store. Why don't you go to the grocery store? I am not coming down to give you bread for your friends. And Jesus said, that's okay. He will tell you that he's not coming down to give you bread for your friends. But you keep knocking. And in time, he will come down because you knock. Doesn't make any difference why. You keep knocking, and he will come down, and you will get the bread. Just because of your persistence. And so it is with prayer. Keep on asking and you will keep on getting. Keep on looking and you will keep on finding. Knock and the door will be opened. It will be opened. Everyone who asks receives and all who seek find. And the door is opened. Everyone who knocks. You men who are fathers, if your boy asks for bread, do you give him a stone? If he asks for fish, do you give him a snake? If he asks for an egg, do you give him a scorpion? Of course not. And if even sinful persons like yourselves give children what they need, don't you realize that your Heavenly Father will do at least as much? Well, obviously I believe in goal setting. And then releasing those goals to the Spirit of God in us who works through us to fulfill, to do for us the things we cannot do for ourselves. And it's when we feel the presence working with us in our lives that we experience the peace that passes understanding and the joy that is above all ability to communicate. If God is to work with us and for us, God must be working on something. And what better thing for God to work on than goals that are mutually arrived at? And by mutually, I do not mean that you and I decide, but that God and you decide for you and God and I decide for me. God and I mutually decide upon the goals, that intelligence that directs my mind to the things that I need in my life is also the power that will reproduce those things, providing that I fulfill the conditions. And the condition is to become a channel through which that power can flow out into activity. All that I am and all that you are channels of its powerful and loving and beautiful activity. Now, I'm laying such stress and placing such high value on this idea of giving because it is simply not correctly taught in life. We have never been taught of the polarity of giving and receiving. And that's why our lives have not changed. I've got a pretty good stereo combination of components at home, and there's a record changer that I like there. It's got lots of the little gadgets on it and the best diamond needle. It does what it's supposed to do. Now, it also has a little button that will cause it to play the same record over and over and over and over and over and over again. And if you don't change it, it will keep playing it over and over and over. And your life is like that. Suppose that a long time ago, you set a goal by not setting a goal. And if you don't set a goal, that's what you've done. You've not set a goal. That becomes your goal. You've created a certain kind of day that happens. And you've created 7 certain kinds of days that make a week, and 4 of those weeks make a month, and 12 of them make a year. Okay? And you put that on your little record changer. And it just keeps playing it over and over and over and over. Now, do you see why we need goals? Why we need to decide that no matter how beautiful it has been, take your best recording and play it 1,000 times and see how much you like it. Take your best day and keep living it and see what it will do to you. Your best day merely is the forerunner of the one that is superior to it that must follow, because you decide that the best is not good enough. That you're a dynamic expression of all life. Then you can program your mind to bring into expression a new day with new events, new circumstances that will be delivered to you and will become your experience. You see, we've been led to believe that our security lies in the acquisition of the world's goods by our own efforts. And that once things are acquired, that we hang on to them for dear life. We keep the same thing going all the time. The flow that leads into us must then stop if we cling or hold on to. Now, if it stops, it blocks the channel. And a channel, to be a channel, must be open at both ends. If we stop the flow of life from coming in because we have not learned to properly conduct it forth by giving, then our success and security are caused to stop. You see, circulation, not acquisition and retention, is where our security is. To conduct means to become a medium or channel for conveying, to transmit. And my friends, we must become contributors to life, to become valuable supporters of the system that supports you. And that's what tithing or a tenth is all about. There's a part of the good that comes to you, the substance that comes to you, that you must keep. And let's call that a tenth part that you put aside, and it becomes the principle. There's a part that you must spend. Let's call that the 80th part, 8/10. That's the part that you support yourself with and pay for your food and your lodging and the beautiful new car, and it is from that part that you send your child to college. There's that last part, it should be the first part, it's the first tenth, that you give to life to support that which has supported you, a system of ideas, of truth, and of learning. And this is the most powerful part. It's the most creative part. You and I must learn to give of ourselves. If you will read in the prophet, it will tell you that what have you profited if you give of your possessions? It's when you give of yourself that you truly give. This does not mean that you are not to give of your possessions, that you cling to them. You give of them, yes, but you give of yourself. For if you give, you will get. Your gift will return to you in full and overflowing measure, pressed down, shaken together to make room for more, and running over. Whatever measure you use to give, large or small, will be used to measure what is given back to you. In other words, you can't ever really have, you can never really keep what you want until you learn to share it, until you no longer want it for yourself alone. All that you can keep is what you give away. You've heard it said that the meek inherit the earth. Well, the generous inherit the universe. As for me, I choose the universe. Thomas Clark wrote, I sought his love in sun and stars and where the wild seas roll and found it not. As mute I stood, fear overwhelmed my soul. But when I gave to one in need, I found the Lord of love indeed. There was a time in my life when it changed so dramatically that I cannot describe it to you. And for weeks and months I pondered, what is it that has brought this to pass? And I hungered to know. And one night it was revealed to me by the Lord of love. A moment along the way, when I had given up all hope for myself, I shared with a person that I never saw before and would never see again. And in that moment, the law fulfilled itself. It can never be broken. Why is it more blessed to give than to receive? Because as you give, you are placing your own order, and the law of love will fill it, heaped up, pressed down, and running over. So go out to give yourself away. The more you give, the more you will become.